This is Justin with a quick note before today's show. I know that some of you are traveling frequently on deployments with limited connectivity, so I've put together a deployment kit. It's a flash drive with 80 episodes, including ones I haven't yet released on the show, as well as ebooks and a PDF of all the show notes. Check it out on the resources tab at beyondtheuniform.io. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 84 with David Smith.
You should always apply a couple levels above where you think you fit in. I've never applied to a school that I thought I'd actually get into. I've never applied for a job that I thought I would actually get, and I managed to get all of them. It blows my mind every single time, but it's good. It's a good reality check.
The top reason to listen to today's episode is, number one, courage. David is such an awesome example of courage. The courage he showed when he moved to Norway, where he eventually joined a startup as their chief marketing officer. The courage he showed in taking a year to travel to over 12 countries doing humanitarian work and also doing personal development work. The courage he has to talk about his struggle with PTSD and very personal experiences he's had with suicide. And the courage he demonstrates in constantly pushing himself to apply for things just out of his reach, and very often achieving them. I find David to be a passionate and inspiring person, and know you will too. As always, there are a tremendous amount of resources at beyondtheuniform.io. In the show notes for this episode, you'll find about 24 links to different resources we discuss, so check them out. And with that, let's dive in to my interview with David Smith. Well, joining me today in Trondheim, Norway, is David Smith. David, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background. David Smith is the Chief Marketing Officer, or CMO, at Dogu, a Norwegian business-to-business software company that creates unique solutions that allow businesses to visualize data and accelerate sales. He started out in the Marine Corps as an infantry rifleman, and since the Marine, he has graduated from the University of California, Berkeley, volunteered as a social entrepreneur doing humanitarian work in over 12 countries, and has been part of the Stanford Ignite Veterans Program, and many other diverse activities I'm sure we'll get into during the interview. David, to start off, I always like to ask, at what point did you know you were going to leave the Marine Corps, and how did you approach that?
Well, so interestingly enough, I didn't really intend to get out of the military. I left the Marine Corps in order to go to a National Guard Special Forces unit down in Southern California. And lo and behold, to my surprise, my land nav skills were not as good as I thought they were, and I failed the initial selection. And by the time that I got a chance to go back to the selection a second time, I had switched into the inactive guard and had been doing college, and so when I went back, they were actually unable to find my paperwork. I had just been discharged honorably, and it was a really, really, really weird thing that happened, and I tried pretty hard to get back in, but the waiver for that, nobody really knew where to get it from. So I had no desire whatsoever to leave the military. I always wanted to be in the military, and it is a really weird thing that happens, but life takes its course sometime, I guess. Mm.
And what was the first job search like, and what ultimately led you to Andrews International?
So the first job search was pretty interesting, trying to figure out, okay, how do I apply these grunt-level skills? You know, where can I apply for jobs, and where can I get in? I remember looking at different sites on the internet and just trying to figure out, like, okay, you know, what fits? Andrews International is a pretty decent private security firm. However, I came in at a very entry level, kind of almost just basic California Guard style. And I arrived there because I was just looking for a way to use the skills that I had. I wanted to do something that involved security and protection, but wasn't sure really what direction to take it in.
What advice would you have for vets who are thinking of pursuing education after military experience, and what your experience was like at Berkeley?
Well, the Berkeley experience was quite interesting, but as you can imagine, my advice to any veteran is that, you know, you've got the GI Bill or some form of it. Every veteran has some form of college reimbursement, and you should take advantage of every single cent. I never considered myself a college type. So to be honest, when I got out of the military and I was waiting for my second go-around in the Guard, I enrolled in college and figured I would be a C-level student at best. And I sat down and I started doing the work and I applied myself and I got straight A's. And I figured it must have been a fluke. So I signed up for a second semester and I got straight A's again. And that's when I kind of realized that I could do a lot more than I thought. All of those skills of leadership and discipline and really just getting down and burning the midnight oil and doing whatever I had to do to turn in a 100% completely done and done well product. I think that in the 4 years from the time that I left high school and then left the Marine Corps, I didn't realize internally how much skill and how much discipline I had picked up, but it really started to show itself. So anyone who's considering going to college, whether it's a trade school, I know that the trade schools are often undervalued by a lot of folks, but I think trades personally are absolutely amazing. I hope that the need for trade skills goes up a lot. And I hope that those people get the value out of that kind of training that they should see. But regardless of what you study, as long as you're going to a good university, you know, I'd avoid the for-profit universities. I'd avoid burning through a GI Bill at University of Phoenix or whatever else that seems to reach out there and recruit vets because they know they got GI Bill money. The other thing that I would say about college is a lot of vets don't think – they undervalue themselves. They undervalue the way that admissions boards look at them. They undervalue the skill set that they bring to the table. They undervalue how much leadership they have and what leadership – what military leadership is worth on the outside. And so I think a lot of times they're just – you know, they stay in an online school or a state school. And there's nothing wrong with those at all. But, you know, if you've got the desire, you can easily apply to, you know, higher-level universities, private schools, whatever. And I think that you should always apply a couple levels above where you think you fit in. I've never applied to a school that I thought I'd actually get into. I've never applied for a job that I thought I would actually get, and I managed to get all of them. It blows my mind every single time, but it's good. It's a good reality check. So education is really essential. I think one of the biggest things that I learned is that I was so much more than just a door kicker. I had the ability to get in there, to solve complex problems, to leverage education, to bump minds with the best in the business and still come out on top, still pull great grades. And that was really unique to me. I never considered myself much of an academic. So yeah, I still kind of don't consider myself much of an academic, but whenever I put myself in the academic courses, I come out pretty well. Mm-hmm. I think it has a lot to do with just the real desire to have absolute quality in anything that I turn in.
Mm. It's so refreshing to hear that. It's, you know, I feel like a lot of the rhythm that I've heard in a lot of these interviews is people kind of, a lot of people get out and they've listened to this message of you can do anything, and then they kind of get the wind punched out of them. You know, they have to take a pay cut, or they don't immediately get valued for their previous experience, or they face a lot of obstacles they didn't expect. And it sounds like one of the themes of your story is just kind of like being pleasantly surprised at being able to do more than you expected. And I love what you said about always applying above that level. And I'm sure we'll get into that more, but I love that sense of like having the courage to take those risks and to reach a little further, put yourself out of your comfort zone, try for something that you might not even, you know, you don't even think you're qualified for. And then, you know, you get it. It makes me think of that. You know, they would always say like, no one ever asks the prom queen out to a date because they're all intimidated. And like, if you have that courage to apply for things that you don't think that you're qualified for, it works out every once in a while, and it builds up that muscle of believing in yourself. So I think that's really refreshing.
That's the prom queen thing is a really good way of putting it. That's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. That and the rise above mentality, you know, I think that not even just veterans, I think that tons of people in any walk of life undervalue themselves. I don't know whether it's a result of upbringing or of something else or whatever, but people just generally undervalue themselves in life. And I think that that's a tragic thing. And I think that instead of undervaluing yourself, I don't think that you should have an ego that's overblown out of proportion, but you should absolutely push the limits of anything that you try to achieve. If you're going to do it, do it 110% and don't give up until you get there. And I think that if you do that, regardless of what the walk of life is, you'll be pleasantly surprised.
That's awesome. I just finished this book and I'm having the author on the show. The author's name is Cal Newport. He wrote this book called So Good They Can't Ignore You. And one of the things that resonated was exactly what you said of just whatever job is in front of you, just crush it. You know, if you hate your job, great. Try and find out where you want to go instead, but like destroy whatever you're doing. And it makes me think, I just interviewed the former CEO of PepsiCo, Steve Reinemann, and he talks about how he never had aspirations of being CEO of a Fortune 100 company. He just approached each job and did it to the best of his ability. And I find something so reassuring about that, that you don't have to be, you know, always just kind of like feeling like you're reaching for this next thing. It's just like, do everything you can, push yourself to do wherever you're at right now, just knock it out of the park.
I think that applies particularly well to guys who are just coming out of the military. You may come out of the military where you've been leading a lot of troops and had a lot of responsibility. You may land yourself in a job that you're not extremely proud of, that you know is somewhat below you. But guess what? Whether you're a janitor or a street sweeper or driving trucks, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
You know, make that floor cleaner than anybody else is going to make it, or do whatever. Do it 110%. Any time that I look at people, nobody looks at what your job or station in life is. I think that people just look at how much effort you put into it.
I love it. I love it. Well, I wanted to dig into some of your extracurricular activities because you've been really active in the vet community and Team Rubicon, the George W. Bush Presidential Center. I'm wondering, what would you want veteran listeners to know about your experience with each of these organizations?
Well, I would say that when I first got out of the military, I wasn't really aware of any of the veteran service organizations that were out there at all. And I became aware of them through some stuff that I'll get into a little bit later in this chat. But once I made the decision to look for resources, it was really important for me to find high quality resources and resources that allowed me to fill the gaps that were missing after the military. When I got out of the military, I was really missing sense of purpose. I was really missing it. You know, I was there with guys that I loved, who I served with, who I'd do anything with. And then just boom, living in an apartment in Los Angeles, working a, you know, $12 or $13 an hour security job and whatever. And I was like, that's fine. I'll work my way up from this and that's okay. But I miss the people. I miss the mission. I miss the passion. I miss having clearly defined goals in front of me, sense of purpose. I miss knowing exactly what I'm getting up for every morning. And so when I started to look for some of those organizations, I started to find that again. You know, when I linked up with Team Rubicon, that's one of their driving things, giving vets sense of purpose again and camaraderie and team spirit, you know, rebuilding those things. Same with Team Red, White, and Blue, which will get folks into athletics. Go Ruck is a good one. You know, if you want to go out and torture yourself a little bit, the Go Ruck folks are pretty cool. All of these. And then the Bush Center, of course, is great as well. They've got a really strong passion for data-driven science behind, you know, what makes a real difference in a transitioning veteran's life. And so each program provides different benefits and has a different approach to it. So I would say to each person, you know, get out there, don't be shy, test them out, find what you like, find the group that you like, find some kind of support and get on with it, because we all get out and we're like, okay, cool. You know, I'm strong and I'm resilient and I'm blah, blah, blah. But you'll catch yourself, you know, your first 3 months out of the military, you're like waving your DD-214 in the air. You're like, hell yeah, I'm out of here, you know? And then 6 months or a year or 3 years after, depends on the person. But at some point in time after, you're like, damn it. You know, there are days when I wake up and I have a longing to do anything in the military. I would sit outside of the armory and clean weapons all day long. just to be around the guys, just to be back in the uniform, just to be doing it again. And I mean, that speaks volumes. So regardless of what your passion is or what you're searching for, linking up with some of these VSOs is a really brilliant idea. You'll find like-minded people who will give you what you need in life.
I love it. I want to talk about, and I forgot to ask the pronunciation. Is it Dogu?
Yeah,
Dogu. Okay, Dogu. So I want to ask about that. But first, what would you want people to know about your career between Berkeley and then getting to Dogu?
My career between Berkeley and getting to Dogu was kind of unique, but again, is another example of two guiding principles. Principle number one, follow your heart. Principle number two, always apply a couple levels above what you think you can achieve. When I was leaving Berkeley, I mean, I had a job at Andrews International and I had worked security in another company, and it didn't feel like anything really amazing on a resume. And my degree at Berkeley was in political science. And coming up on leaving Berkeley, I was trying to figure out what on earth I was going to do next. And a friend mentioned an internship at the New York Stock Exchange. And I was like, yeah, right. I'm not a finance major, didn't study economics. I don't, you know, I've got a very, very basic understanding of stock and trade. And so, but I applied anyways. I sent a passionate cover letter. I explained to him why I wanted to be there. I did the interview. And I was able to convey how my military skills applied to business in a very good manner, which is of course something I practiced. Anybody who's going to go and do that, I suggest practicing, right? You got to know how your skills translate and be really good at explaining that. But I applied for something I thought I'd never land. And so I managed, I ended up interning at the New York Stock Exchange for a few months, met great people, had a great time. And then from there, ended up doing a year-long humanitarian trip around the world. And the goal of that humanitarian trip was to really sort myself out, to follow my heart, to help others, to find myself, to find peace, you know, within my soul. And just to get out there and learn about the world, see much more of the world without being under small arms fire while I'm doing it, right? You know, give people a chance again, that sort of thing. And it was an incredible opportunity. It worked all over. South Africa, Swaziland, India, Nepal, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Ireland, Romania, Moldova, Albania.
Was that self-organized, or was that part of like an official thing, or did you kind of find each individual opportunity on your own?
So it was organized through a Christian missions organization, which is a big – so I was raised in a Christian home, raised as a Christian. But soon enough, sure, as bullets started going overhead, I was like, eh, whatever, right? And then in combat, you got to do what you got to do. So I had a very hard time trying to reconcile the amount of violence that we put down on the enemy, which is pretty serious, with the way that I was raised. You know, okay, what type of person does this make me, and what's this, and why did good people die? You know, why did I lose friends? That kind of stuff. And it was really difficult. I had some very, very difficult inner questions that I was trying to answer. And I gave up on religion. I gave up on all that, tossed it out the window along the way. And I kind of wanted to get back and at least give it a round two shot. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely worth it. I learned more about love and passion and service and helping people, and really healing the inner soul, which sounds crazy. You know, as a grunt, you know, I never thought I'd be like, oh, I healed my inner soul, bro. It was awesome. But, you know, as you push along in life, it's really, really important to be able to properly close one chapter and then open the next chapter. Mm-hmm. You ever try to read a book with two separate chapters open? It doesn't work well. So
no, I love that, man. I'm a firm believer in what you're saying on that. And I think it takes a tremendous amount of courage to face, you know, those scars and face those wounds and like figure them out and sort them out and confront them. I do think it's much, I think that for myself, I'll just speak of it. It seems stronger to ignore it, to just suppress stuff and to just power through it. And I think that's what we're really good at for the military. We can power through anything. And I found over time, it actually takes more strength and more courage to actually confront those things, to take the time to really unpack them And I really admire that you took, you know, it sounds like you took 12 months to not only to do that for yourself, but in doing so, you were helping a lot of people as well. So it's really cool to see that mission where it benefited yourself and others. It's very powerful.
Well, thank you. And I think that just for anybody who's listening, who's been in a similar situation, I tell you here and now, when you suppress that stuff, it's gonna come back up. It eventually will come back up. You cannot suppress it forever. And so the earlier that you are able to deal with it and the more honest that you are able to be, the easier it's going to go. Some of these problems, some of these things that happened in Iraq when I had buddies who were injured and it bothered me, if I'd have just taken it and chatted it out with somebody, you know, and sorted it, I think I'd have been much better off instead of trying to suppress it, drown it in alcohol, blame myself, blame whoever else and question it and let it turn into some festering problem.
I love it. I love it. So how did you ultimately, where did you go then from the humanitarians? You do this year of just this incredible experience. What happens next?
Yeah. So while I was studying in Berkeley, I met a girl who was from Norway. And I had visited Norway once for a few months with her, and we had dated for about a year or so, or two. And then we kept in contact while I was going around the world, dating slash not. It was we both knew that we really, really liked each other a lot, but going around the world for a year is difficult, and not knowing what's going to happen next is difficult. She had finished her work visa here in the U.S., so was back in Norway, and I was going around the world. But we kept in touch, and when I finished, I went straight to Norway. Nothing but the same backpack that I had had in Africa and India and wherever else. So came here with like board shorts and flip flops and, you know, full backpacker style. Spent Christmas with her and her family. We picked up right where we had left off. And I think that when you love somebody, when you really love somebody, you know, and your inside will tell you if you're willing to listen. And when you listen to that and when you know it and when you just go with it, it'll find a way. So long story short is I wasn't there for very long before I was like, yep, all right, great. I'm going to search for a job here. So
that's awesome. I mean, I love, you know, I love the thought of, again, not I just finished this book, so I don't want to reference it too much, but in this book by Cal Newport, he talks about how, you know, a lot of us try to make the leap to what we're going to do forever. And it's like usually just one decision after another. And it seems from an external standpoint that you made this decision to do this round the world humanitarian effort. And I'm imagining that that got you more open to the thought of living in another spot. I wonder if like immediately from the Marine Corps, if you would have ever thought of living in somewhere like Norway full time. And I just wonder what role this little baby step took in like getting so much exposure to so many different countries. And then when you're confronted then with someone that you really connect with, you're like, you know what? I'm willing to do what I might have thought was crazy a couple of years ago, but these little steps have gotten me there.
That's a fair point. Yeah, to be honest with you, I'd have been surprised if I knew where the hell Norway was straight out of the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. What is Norway? Is that the capital of Sweden or what? Yeah.
So once you made that decision to move, how did you find the opportunity? Was Dogu the first place you worked in Norway, or how did you find that first role?
Yeah, this is the first place I've been. It's the only job that I've had here. To be honest, it was extremely difficult for a number of reasons. Finding job in Norway is quite hard. Moving to any foreign country and finding work, if you don't speak the mother tongue, is difficult. I'm not fluent in Norwegian. Norwegian is the business language, even though everyone here speaks perfect English. And it's very important to speak Norwegian because sales, marketing, everything's done in Norwegian. So it's pretty difficult. I searched for a while. I searched for probably 3 months and submitted something like 100 different applications and wasn't hearing back. And I was like, shoot, you know, and like I said, I came here for love. I'd have taken a job as a janitor or as anything else and then managed my way from there. I was open to absolutely anything. But what happened is I had a friend in the military, his name was Clay Hunt, and Clay had some pretty pretty severe post-traumatic stress, and he killed himself in 2011, and which has a lot to do with why I took that trip around the world and why I was trying to sort things myself. But in 2014, President Obama signed the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention Act. And so I got a chance to fly to the White House and be there for the signing of the bill with Clay and his family and a handful of other folks who Clay knew through Team Rubicon and everything else. Clay was an extremely, extremely close friend of mine. And so that's why I had the opportunity to go. And then a week after that, oddly enough, I got a chance to be on a panel with President George W. Bush down in Dallas, Texas, talking about veteran reintegration and the mission of Team 43 and the Bush Center, what they're doing down there. So I came back, and you know, sometimes in life you got to fish with dynamite. And if I was in the U.S., I never would have tried to be like, oh, look at me, put me in a newspaper. But I came back here and I contacted a couple of folks that I had networked with a little bit, and I was like, hey, is there a chance that I can, you know, leverage this story in some way to try and get myself in a newspaper and talk about how much I want to live here in Norway and how I'm searching for a job and whatever. So basically just went fishing with dynamite. Ended up in a local newspaper, full 3-page spread. They put part of my bio in there, talked about it. I think the title was something like American meets two presidents in 1 week, can't land a job in Norway. So the phone started ringing. I got a job at a really cool software company. So
that's
there's
awesome.
A lot of really interesting side stories in life. That's for sure. That's one of them.
Good for you putting yourself out there. I mean, one of the consistent themes is how hard it is for veterans to really promote themselves and to, I think that they're great at taking risks in every area, except maybe taking the risk of like promoting themselves. And so having that courage to put yourself out there and to seek that, because that wouldn't have come to you. It'd be so rare for people just to discover that story, but to kind of put yourself in a situation where you get that attention that ultimately leads to this cool opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to dig in a little bit to your work at Dogu, but first, set the stage. What would you want people to know about Dogu and what you guys do?
Well, Dogu is it's a Norwegian acronym. It's for Data og Utvikling, which basically means data and development. So we are a software company, a regular, full-on, bootstrapped software startup. No outside investment. We've got plenty of offers, and we've looked into the investment route, but it's very unique being a bootstrapped startup. We've learned a ton about it. It has required all of us to go far above and beyond anything we ever thought we could do. You know, for instance, if we were a company who would take on outside investment, I could hire people to come in and do Google AdWords and analytics and all that other stuff that's really hard and tricky and I don't want to mess with. But instead, I'm the marketing guy, and I had to knuckle down and be like, yep, all right, I'll learn how to do that, and just day and night reading books and learning online and everything else. So Dogu is a really cool company. It's not your average startup. Everyone here is 100% focused on the mission of making a really long-term sustainable company that's based on really high-quality products. And so the company culture here is absolutely amazing, bunch of great folks. And I really love working here. You know, I'm the second oldest guy at the company, and I'm 31 years old. So that says a lot. And, it's a really unique ride. I had the opportunity to learn a ton about entrepreneurship and startups, and had a chance to go to Stanford Ignite program. I know you had, Lydia and a handful of other folks from Stanford Ignite program on here. And, it's amazing all the programs that are out there for veteran entrepreneurs. That's probably another thing to dig into later, but the amount of resources for veterans who want to start or build a company is breathtaking. Really high quality stuff and great folks out there. So I'll cap it there for Dogu.
So how would you explain your role as chief marketing officer within a startup, and what does your day-to-day life look like?
Man, so my role here is to do literally the full spectrum of anything marketing related. I do sales conferences, keynote speeches, press releases, digital advertising, social media marketing, content generation, any type of lead generation for our sales teams. I'm trying to generate leads all the time. It's literally completely full spectrum marketing. The majority of it is digital, but you know, a lot of it also is trying to figure out, okay, so digital is great, but where can we go to showcase this product and talk about it and get people to come visit? It's really leveraging absolutely everything that you can possibly come up with to get some warm leads in. And the side note of that is that, of course, as a bootstrapped company, we don't have tons of money for that stuff, you know? We don't have tons and tons of money to go to a sales conference and maybe we get some leads, maybe we don't. So each thing that we do, we got to knock it out of the park, which goes completely hand in hand with what I said earlier about if you're going to do something, do it to the best of your ability. Do it a couple levels above what you think you're capable of. So I've been writing press releases and talking to, you know, sales leaders around the globe and other stuff, and just trying to make this little bootstrapped product into something that's really, really incredible. And it's been really interesting. My day-to-day life is relatively flexible. That's an upside of the startup. So I usually wake up around 7 a.m. I bike to work, rain, snow, anything. So I bike about 8 kilometers through the snow these days, go straight to the gym. I usually leave the gym at about 9:30 or 10 a.m. because I don't get full concentration mode on until about 9:30 or 10 a.m. anyway. So I knock the gym out early in the morning and really get at it. Although a lot of people wouldn't consider that early in the morning. But anyways, then I sit down. I got a full task list of stuff to do. We use Trello or different other, you know, communications boards. And I got all my tasks and I'll sort through them and rank them by priority and just knock them out one by one, get everything done. And then pack up, go home to the woman I love. So there's no complaints here.
That's pretty awesome. I'm wondering with, maybe first we'll dive into the resources. You talked about these resources are at Stanford Ignite, and I'm just wondering what resources would you recommend for vets and or any thoughts on how they can find the right resources for them?
Well, it depends on what resources they're looking for, but if we're talking particularly about entrepreneurship resources, leveraging LinkedIn is a pretty good start because vets are pretty good at using LinkedIn, and the veteran community is pretty decent size in one way in terms of our reach and our strength in numbers is really good. But at the same time, if you get to know the right handful of people within the veteran community, it's a small world. I run into the same people over and over again at, you know, Salesforce conferences or at, you know, vets in tech things or in entrepreneurship circles. I see the same folks again and again. And so I would definitely say that start there. Start figuring out who's in your industry or who's working on something related to what you're interested in. Start reaching out to them. I would never turn down an open chat from somebody if they were like, hey, you know, I'm also a vet and I'm trying to start a business. Can you talk to me a little bit about marketing? I'd be like, I'm not exactly the pro, but yeah, I'll help you with anything that you need. I think that veterans will go bend over backwards for each other to help each other succeed. So some of the resources, there's the IVMF, Institute for Veterans and Military Families, runs a program called the Entrepreneurship Bootcamp for Veterans. It's based out of Syracuse University, but I know they do one at UCLA, one at Cornell, a handful of others. It's a really good entry level. If you are kind of pretty new to entrepreneurship and you want to learn about what's finance, what's accounting, what's marketing, what's sales, it's a week long. They'll cover the cost of the course. They'll fly in, everything else, so you don't have to worry about any of it. It's pretty top-notch instruction, and it's a good way to start meeting the right people.
What was the name of that program?
It's called the EBV, Entrepreneurship Bootcamp for Veterans.
Okay, great. And now, and for listeners, I'll add links to all these in the show notes.
Yep, perfect, perfect. Another one is, of course, the Stanford Ignite program, which is, I don't want to compare the two, but I would say that Ignite is kind of the next level up, where it's really in-depth, it's serious, it's a month-long, in-depth, everything you could ask for a program over at Stanford. and you know, you'll be busy. You will be busy day and night, and you'll probably drink a lot of beer too. But it's a great time. The level of folks, the quality of characters that they bring into that program is absolutely mind-blowing. I will say this about Sanford Ignite. I've never been around a group of people where I just looked around the room and was like, what the hell am I doing here? But, you know, it's one of those groups where they really groom them and pick them. And you look around and be like, my golly, there's some incredible folks here. And, you know, that's what you want to be around. Always a couple levels above, always a couple lead. You never want to be the smartest person in the room, that kind of thing, right? And as I was saying earlier, I don't think I'll never get into Stanford Ignite. I'll never whatever. Well, guess what? Do your best. You know, write a good essay. Send in the application. You don't know unless you try. I didn't think I'd get into Stanford Ignite either, especially from Norway. I didn't think they'd be like, oh, yeah, Norwegian, let's bring him in, you know, or a guy from across the pond. But went for it anyways, because why the hell not? And keeping that mentality is really good. There's a handful of others. There's some Bunker Labs that's like a startup incubator for veterans. They do really good stuff. It kind of depends on what you're looking for, if you want an incubator space to kind of grow. But I understand that it's a pretty good thing if you've got a general idea and you want to incubate it, you want to grow it a little bit and have access to all the right people and resources. And then there's a handful of others that I'll try and get to you afterwards. But that's a decent starter rundown for the moment.
That's great. That's great. I'm wondering, I always like to try and dive into failure, one, because I think that that's where we learn so much about life, and two, I think it's something that's an adjustment for most veterans, where failure is catastrophic in many situations within the military, and I think in the civilian sector, it's much less catastrophic and much more of a catalyst for learning. And so I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share one of the mistakes you've made since leaving the military and what you learned from it.
Yeah. So backtracking on the stuff I said that I would get into a little bit later, here we are. I actually was standing in the bedroom of my college apartment in March of 2012 with a loaded shotgun in my mouth. True story. And the reason for that is that I did, you know, I suppressed all that emotion, all that stuff that I didn't want to deal with. I tried to suppress it through alcohol or through whatever else, and avoid it and not pay attention to it. And, oh, you know, post-traumatic stress is for sissies. That shit doesn't happen to me. And so my massive failure really from getting out of the military was not realizing that there's absolutely nothing wrong with just chatting it out, going, talk to a counselor, do what you need to do, get your problems out there. You know, if there's something that's bothering you, it doesn't have to take you forever. Even then, when I started going to counselors, they'd be like, oh, you know, so what brings you in? And I'd be like, I don't know, I'm angry. They'd be like, well, why are you angry? I'm like, I don't know, you're supposed to tell me that. I'd flip out, you know. So it was unique. For my first month of going to vet centers and going to counseling, I'd go in there and just yell at people. But eventually started to calm down, started to draw this stuff out. Well, what's causing these problems? You know, why is it this way? Why are you upset? I don't know. You figured out. Sure. Whatever. And also had that mindset like, oh, you never been in combat. You can't possibly understand. So you can't fix it. That's incorrect. That's 110% incorrect. Those folks, it may just be a degree on the wall if that's the way that you look at it, but they know what they're talking about. They know what they're doing. And they got a strong passion and desire to help veterans, because if they didn't, they'd be taking a higher paying job elsewhere. So can't stress strongly enough that there is absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, standing up and being like, hey, I got a problem. I need to fix it, and I need help. And all you got to do, post it up on Facebook, post it, whatever. Reach out in absolutely any direction. Pop that red flare in the sky. Doesn't matter. As long as somebody can see that red flare, right? Because guess what? Once that red flare is in the sky, you're not alone anymore. Somebody's going to reach out to you. And when they reach out, there's going to be resources. And when those resources come, there's going to be more resources. And the second part of this is that when those resources become available, You got to take full responsibility for using them. All right. You can't cry wolf. You can't be like, oh God, my PTSD is so bad and I got this and I and, you know, be like, oh God, I'm thinking about suicide. And then people give you resources and everything and you don't pay attention to them. All right. You got to be serious. You know, you got to take advantage of that stuff. And you got to be like, all right, I admitted that there's a problem. I know that something's going on. I know that something's wrong. I'm going to man up. I'm going to grab myself by the bootstraps, walk into the VA, the vet center, the whatever. I'm going to talk to counselors. I'm going to talk to friends. I'm going to talk to family. I will give away my guns if I have to, or whatever it is that you got laying around the house. There is nothing wrong with that. I tried to get Clay to give me his gun once. He considered it, and then I made a joke saying, you know, maybe I'll give it back to you eventually. And I wish I wouldn't have done that because he ended up giving me his guns. You know, get rid of that stuff, right? Until you're in a safe space, a safe environment where you can clear your head, do it. And it's not just it happens to everybody. And I've talked to guys from every range and spectrum of the military that you can imagine, guys who have done all kinds of stuff, flying Predator drones, to guys who are on a base, to guys who are in infantry, to guys that were in literally every range of special operations. And I've chatted with them, and combat affects each person differently in a different way. So don't let anybody belittle what you did. Don't let anybody look. You're the only person who knows and understands your situation. I was raised in a very, very Christian family, you know, do well unto the others, blah, blah, blah. And so when I ended up in combat pulling triggers, you know, that's kind of a life-changing thing, right? And you're like, oh, yeah, I'm such a badass, right? But kind of at the same time, you're like, oh, shit, that was crazy. So it's really, really important to talk that stuff out with somebody else. Nobody can do transition alone. Nobody can do transition alone. I don't care who you are. You got to have a support network. You got to have friends. You got to have people who are around who are going to help you. And so that was my biggest failure coming out of the military, although I managed to turn it into a success because I finally took advantage of it. But, you know, if I could go back and do it again, I absolutely would not have drawn it to a point where I was standing in a college apartment with a shotgun in my mouth. Mm. It scared the shit out of my friends and family and everybody else. It took a serious wake-up call. So if anybody else can avoid being at that point, do it. Mm. Take advantage, like, do what you need to do early.
Man, I appreciate the courage in sharing your story and your candor in that. And for, two things I'd say for listeners is I'll add this in the show notes. Three episodes, I think, relevant to this. One is Tim Avery, who's doing his PhD work and does a lot of work with veterans. Another is Dwayne France, who does a lot with mental health with veterans. Both of them have a lot of great things to say about just taking care of yourself and exactly what David's talking about here. And then also Anthony Garcia from Guide On, who just talks about the severe depression he went through of just having lost friends in combat and trying to reconcile that. And I think that all those are great great additions to everything that David just said here. And I would echo too, I'm a huge advocate of therapy. I think that even for those of us, because you went through much more severe circumstances than I did in my service, but even for people who have not gone through the combat experiences David is describing, I view that in anything, if you want to get better, you need a mentor or you need a coach. If you want to be the best athlete possible, no one trains solo for the Olympics. It's asinine, right? Olympic athletes have multiple coaches who are challenging them, who are helping them, who are making them achieve, they're helping them achieve their best. And I view that therapy is no different. It's just helping you delve to a deeper level mentally and helping you uncover the millions of things that all of us have that hold us back in subtle ways and keep us from being our best. And so I really applaud you, David, in speaking candidly about this. And I think it takes so much more courage to do what you did, to go in and to confront that anger. And even if you're going in there and just yelling at people for just continuously showing up week after week, and it's like the onion, you start to peel back the pieces and you start to realize what are the different parts of you that are causing this and reconciling that. So, you know, so the different pieces of you are all pushing in the same direction rather than pulling at each other and going in different directions. So yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. And I'll say when I did sort it, when I finally started to peel back the onion, it was a weird time. I would sit and just all of a sudden start crying for no reason. Weird stuff happened. My heart, the ice around the heart or the stone or whatever started to chip away. And it was a really weird time, but you know what? I just kept sticking with it. So my grandfather was a World War II veteran, and I didn't know this story before about a year ago, but he was in some really heavy combat and was wounded. He's a Purple Heart recipient, and never at all spoke about being in combat. And he passed away a few years ago. And my dad was telling me that my grandmother passed away just shortly before him. And just shortly after my grandmother passed away, another World War II veteran moved across the street from him, and they started talking. And they were literally in late 80s or 90s when they finally started talking about their combat experience. And they'd weep about it, and they finally got it all off their chest. But it took them that long to finally get it out there. And he was at peace with it when he passed on. But the guy was, you know, almost 90 years old. Do you really want to do that? Do you want to be there? Like, do it early, right? Do what you need to do, sort it, and then reach out. And it's another important part. After you do it, reach out and get someone else to do it. Mm. Clay Hunt. Clay is the one that got me to seek the help I needed. I would not be in the same place without him. Mm. Absolutely not. So it takes a veteran to help a veteran. We won't listen to other people if they're like, oh, you're messed up, you need help. We're going to be like, hey, we'll tell them where to shove it, right? But if it's a veteran, if it's someone that we know and have respect for, and they're like, hey, man, here's the deal. I struggled with this, and then, you know, I did this and this, and I sorted it out. And it looks to me like you're in a similar place, and I just wanted to let you know I've been there, and then I did this, and I think you should do it too. That's what we need a lot more of. That's the most, absolutely most effective way.
Mm. I love that. I love that sense of taking action too, of reaching out. And I'm a big fan of a lot of what Tony Robbins talks about, but he has this great quote that is, never leave the sight of a goal without first taking some sort of positive action towards its attainment. And I love that thought of, like, you know, it sounds like in your story, like, you realized that you needed something and you took action right there. And I think that that's like, I think that, you know, they talk about in entrepreneurship, a bias for action is what differentiates successful entrepreneurs. And I love that sense just in life in general. It's like, as soon as you make that realization, do something, put it on your calendar, tell someone you want to do it, reach out, email someone, post on Facebook, take something that commits you. Cause that, whether that's seeking personal help with PTSD, or whether that's taking the next job, or whether that's taking a career leap, in any of those cases, it's the same thing of like committing yourself to some sort of action. So you don't find yourself wanting to do that over and over again, and it's too late.
Cause that'll tell you whether or not you're going to fix it. Same could be said for smoking or anything else. Are you just saying you're going to quit smoking, or are you actually going to quit? Are you just saying that you're going to get better with your mental health, or are you actually going to do it? Mm. You know, because all of the resources and VSOs and everything else in the world is not going to do you a damn bit of good if you don't take the responsibility to really get out there. And it hurts. It hurts like hell. I thought my heart was going to explode for months. Mm. Honestly, I thought my heart was literally gonna explode. I almost had to check myself into a hospital. It hurt so bad. And I don't know why. I don't know why it was that way. But now I've never been happier or healthier. I feel love in a way that I never thought that I would feel love. I have a range of emotions that I never thought that I would ever be able to experience. I have a love for life. I have this deep, dark cloud of depression and awful forebodings about the way the thing is going to go. I'm about life every day, and I'm excited. And it wouldn't be that way if I didn't have other people to help get me there.
Yeah, I love that. I view it kind of sometimes as you know, like a palette of colors with emotions, where it's like, you know, for a very long time for myself, I knew I was very well acquainted with anger, I was acquainted with like fear, and that was probably the two things that I knew. And then it's, you know, it's like anything else, through practice and through dedication, you can actually open up this whole range of, you know, of loneliness. And what does that feel like? Is it distinct from fear and anger and love and excitement and passion, all these different things, and opening up. I know we just have a few minutes left here, but I wanted to give room just for anything else you want to share. It could be personal, professional, but I always like to make sure we have room before we end to have any other final words of wisdom.
Great. So I would start off here. We just covered the importance of seeking the help that you need, not worrying about the stigma, not worrying about whatever else. Nobody else knows your situation or what's affecting you. Only you. And don't worry either of the, oh, well, I wasn't in the same level. There's guys who were up in Fallujah kicking doors that were in stuff way worse than me. And I used to compare myself, well, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't one of those guys. I can't be this. Or I wasn't a tier one guy, so I can't possibly have this. You can't, you just can't compare yourself to other people. And you can't worry about what they're going to think of you. You know, if you're like, oh, well, I was on a submarine. So people, guess what? If anybody else thinks less of you, you are out there with the uniform on supporting the mission, to hell with anybody else's opinion. Nobody should ever look down on you. And if they do, they got bigger problems than you. The other one that I really, really want to stress, never underestimate yourself. When you take off that uniform, you know, you still got a Superman cape on underneath. You can go do anything, absolutely anything. I've never applied for a job that I thought I would get, never applied to a school that I thought I would get into. I just push the limits. Just go for it anyways. Because, you know, when we're there in the military, we can do anything. If they tell me to run through a brick wall and assault a machine gun nest, I'm going to run through a brick wall. Why would you leave that mindset behind when you get out? And a lot of that revolves around a small handful of things that every veteran needs to do when they get out. Every veteran needs to get the proper amount of sleep. Every veteran needs to take care of themselves. Every veteran needs a sense of purpose. They need exercise and fitness. You gotta get your body moving. You can't like get out and just fall apart. Fitness is extremely important to your overall mental well-being and balance. Everybody needs mentorship. You need a mentor who's going to guide you through life and who's going to help you. I've had at least three mentors at different stages that without them, I can't imagine where I would be. You got to not abuse substances, whatever they are, right? If you got a problem with alcohol, leave the bottle alone, all right? Substance abuse is one of the easiest and quickest ways to end yourself in a whole lot of trouble. I got a DUI shortly out of the military because I just was, you know, go out, rage party, whatever, and it's not good. It's not going to end you anyplace good, that's for sure. So if you know that you can't control yourself under certain situations, stay away from that stuff. You don't need any of that. Go out and work out until you vomit on the floor. You don't need any of that other nonsense. All right, another one, love. Find love and chase love. Don't chase lust. Lust is useless and will get you in a shit ton of trouble. But when you find love, and I do believe that everyone will find it at some point in life, chase it and pursue it with passion. And don't let it go, no matter what. And stick to it. And then the last one is that everyone needs a positive vision for the future. I never considered myself a depressed guy. I never ever thought I had depression. Never. I'm not a depressed guy. I'm generally a happy dude. But deep down somewhere, I didn't really have a bright outlook on the future. I was upset about a lot of things that happened in the military. I made decisions in the Marine Corps that directly led to other Marines being severely injured. That was hard to live with. It was really hard to live with. And I questioned my decision-making abilities. I had confidence issues. I questioned a lot of stuff. But you got to have a positive outlook on the future. You got to know, hey, this is my plan. I'm going to achieve it. And I'm not going to stop until I get it. I'm just absolutely not. I'm going to set goals and I'm going to get them. A lot of people talk about a backup plan. Is a backup plan good? Kind of, yeah. You should probably have something of a backup plan, but you shouldn't have a super detailed backup plan because that just allows you to fall into failure. Having a really detailed backup plan is literally just a way of saying, yep, I'm probably going to fail, and when I do, I'm going to do this. You got to tackle it. I had no backup plan for what happened if I didn't get a job in Norway because I didn't need one. I was going to get a job here one way or another. I'll become a damn Eskimo, right? I'll do whatever it takes. So anyways, there's a handful of ramblings of advice, but it's a lot of stuff.
surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.